Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us a very special guest, an old friend, Dean Gotcher, and we're going to be talking, about how they control your minds, how they have come into our organizations, how they've come into our churches, how they are able to frame the argument in such a way that the average person, unless they are trained in the dialectics, and these concepts of have been so carefully perfected by the enemies of freedom, that the average individual is totally unable to determine what's really transpiring. It's called consensus. It's called it's really a very subtle form of mind control. And yet, Dean has studied this for many years. He certainly is the world's leading expert on this whole concept of diaprax. Dean, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Stan. Glad to be with you.
Well, now, you're going to be up there in the Spokane area. For our listeners in the East, this won't apply to you, but Dean is going to be putting on a series of talks in the Spokane, Eastern Washington area, the end of this week. Would you like just to perhaps, we'll begin the program by telling people where they can come and hear you, and then we'll do that at the end of the program as well.
Okay. Tomorrow I'm going to be at Chillon in Washington.
Well, where is that again?
That's Chillon. And that's more central northern Washington with John Gordon. And if anybody's in that area and wants to come hear this presentation, that number to call is 509-682-3268. Again, John Gordon at Chillon, 509-682-3263. And then on July 8th, that's this coming Thursday, we'll be in Addy. That's north of Spokane. And the number to call there, if you want to know more about that, that's going to be a 7 o'clock meeting. And that number is 509-684-0180. Again, Addy on Thursday, this next week, at 7 p.m. And that's 509-684-0180. And then Friday, we're going to be in Spokane at the Coffee House. And the address is 1231 North Washington. We'll start at 6:30. And again, that's at the in Spokane at the Coffee House, 1231 North Washington at 6:30. And that'll be Friday. And then Saturday, July 10th, we'll be near Deer Park. It's sort of between Spokane and Deer Park at the Wayside Community Center. That's 2200 West Monroe. And then finally, Sunday, 11th July, we'll be at Calvary Chapel, the gathering place, and that's 511 West Hastings Road. We'll start at 6 p.m.
All right, and of course, Dean travels the country at his own expense and trying to get people to understand what's happening, and he certainly is one of the most effective spokesmen for the Christian point of view, trying to awaken people to what's being done to their minds. So why don't you pick up the story and tell our listeners a little bit about what about yourself, and then, of course, what really is going on that the average individual will never understand unless somebody points it out to them.
Well, a little bit about myself. I earned a teacher's degree back in 71 in this very process I explained. I knew that the way I had been trained, the methods I was trained in, that there was a problem with them. They had a direct effect upon my faith in the Lord. And so I didn't continue teaching. I went to seminary, and I enjoyed getting into the scriptures and studying the Greek. And then I saw the same procedure in the seminaries back in the mid-70s. I ended up having, later in my life, a chance to study European history and philosophy, studying the Soviet system under a man who'd earned his doctor's degree out of Harvard in communist Yugoslavia. And that gave me a good foundation to understand, and he and many other professors, a good foundation to understand the dialectic process that I talk about. And so when Goals 2000 came on the scene about 16 years ago, I could see the same pattern, and there was a man by the name of Bill Spady pushing PR man for this. I went back to the university, read his articles, found the men he was built on. He mentioned four men that were foundational to his thought, and I read those men's works. In fact, I'd earned my teacher's degree on one of them, Benjamin Bloom. And then I did the book chase, spent 5 years reading over 600 social psychology books, not because I particularly like reading those kind of books, or, you know, they're 900 plus pages, small print, and somebody left all the pictures out. But I wanted to understand how this process that directly affects our faith is being applied in our society, what effect it has on us in the room, whether it's a town hall meeting or the classroom or the team moment at the workplace or even in the church. And so as the Lord was showing me, giving me understanding with his word, I was doing my homework reading their material, but he was showing me in the scriptures what they were doing. And so as I go across the country, I explain this dialectic process, which is the process used in the garden that Lucifer and Eve do. And I don't know if I really can't believe that most social psychologists realize that they can't even leave the garden with their mindset that it's actually reflected there. And it does have a direct effect upon a person's faith and obedience to God. And so it's important, first of all, to understand the dialectic, and then not just understand it, but also know that it has to be practiced. You can be exposed to some idea. You might even have empathy for it, but until you do something with it, it's not imprinted. It's not a part of your life. And so the second important word with this is praxis, which is just the Greek word for practice. The Acts of the Apostles, praxis apostolos. It simply means it's a revelation of the way a person thinks or a group of people think. But the praxis of the dialectic is not a practice to obedience. It's not a practice to doing right versus wrong. It is a practice to compromise. It is a practice to the gray zone, supposedly. It's a praxis to tolerance. It's a praxis to just this whole illusionary process we find ourselves in society. And so we know of the right and wrong way of thinking. Most Americans still have that as a part of their life experience, disciplined by somebody because they did something wrong, whether it was a grade or by a parent as maybe a physical force involved there, which would certainly be increasingly frowned upon today because we no longer are supposed to think black and white, right and wrong. And so we understand the traditional, maybe we do, maybe we don't, but the transformational or the dialectic is what all of society is being changed with or changed into.
And let me just explain that Dean is referring to this process of dialectics. Dialectics was something that was put together by a German philosopher named Hegel, and the concepts of communism are based upon that. And that is that there really are no absolutes, and change comes about by confrontation. You have a force, an idea, and then you have another idea that would be a counterforce. And then, of course, you have to, of course, give up part of what you believe to accommodate the people who believe differently, and you come up with a new idea. And then that new idea then becomes a thesis, and we have to come up with another idea, a antithesis, and you keep compromising your position till eventually you really have nothing left to base your beliefs on. And this is what they have done so effectively with the American people. Under one guise or another, this is what they're doing with Christianity. After all, you may have strong beliefs in the Bible, but other people think differently, and does that mean that they're necessarily wrong? Well, people so are intent upon saying, well, they believe this because the Bible says it, but there are different versions of the Bible that may give a different idea. Would that be sort of the general way that they would change our attitudes and beliefs?
Correct. What you do is you try to remove those elements or issues that people would strongly disagree on, that cause a breakdown of the relationship. And you focus on those issues or ideas that people would find in common. And it's important that the focus is on ideas, not ideals. Ideals and ideas are different. Ideals are standards that you hold to. You come into the room with a conscience that says this is right and that's wrong. Black is black and white is white. But you're not going to get along with people because somebody else is going to come in with this antithesis, this antithesis, this opposing position. And so if you're going to have world peace, you've got to overcome this right and wrong, black and white way of thinking, this didactic, traditional, 2 + 2 = 4, cannot be any other number, mindset. And by the way, math is actually under attack because everything in the creation has to be, justified under this flux change, nothing is established, everything's relative structure or way of thinking, or they call it a paradigm. The dialectic carries with it not just you and maybe somebody who disagrees with you on a position or an issue, but the synthesis is this procedure, and it's a method, a scheme, a procedure that gets you and the other person to put aside your differences, maybe for just a short period of time, focus on what you have in common. That sounds good, but what it's asking you to do is to put aside your individuality. In other words, put aside... if you've ever been in a meeting, somebody said, don't be so negative, that's your individuality. That's what you come into the room with, this is right and that is not, thou shalt not. And that interferes with the village. That interferes with the classmates in the classroom. That interferes with the workers in the workplace. That interferes even in the church. So what you have to do is you have to have a diversity in the room, this antithesis, but you have to dialogue. In other words, let's talk about those things that we can agree on, and then we'll slowly work on those issues we can disagree on. But you'll learn that the standards and principles you came in that differed with somebody else become less and less important because that the relationship with the other person is essential for you to solve at a need. And so it's not just the community coming together to fix a bridge, and we might disagree on morals. This is you must actually participate in denigrating, putting down your own standards, your own identity, your thou shalt not that you bring in the room that interfere with relationship with somebody else, and it directly affects you. You might think, well, no, I won't say anything, I'll just be silent. Well, for a Christian to be silent in the midst of unrighteousness, because others are standing up who are living in sin and boldly proclaiming it as their lifestyle, and you stand up and you say, you know, thou shalt not, and then it's going to be other Christians in the room says, can't you be reasonable? In other words, we're not interested in principles. We're not interested in what is right and what is wrong from any higher authority. We want to decide collectively, our own experience, our own praxis, our own moment together determines what is right and wrong.
In other words, you would be very, very, you would be criticized because you were judgmental. And, of course, you were basing your judgment on the scriptures. But after all, this is the 21st century, and what was applicable perhaps 20, 30 years ago would not necessarily be applicable to current society. And so we would certainly hurt people's feelings if we were judgmental. Would that be sort of the approach?
Right. And See, the word tolerance isn't going to show up in the Day of Judgment. God's patient, but he's not tolerant. But we're told to be tolerant. In other words, put up with unrighteousness. Don't classify it as unrighteousness. That's just somebody else's lifestyle. So don't bring your standards into the room and preach down somebody else's throat. And in other words, you cannot propagandize your faith. You cannot present openly your faith to a group, essentially they call it a diverse group, in other words, people who have differing positions. And the effect, though, is even when you're silent, I have a friend who attended a conference I spoke at in New Jersey. He came up afterwards and he said, you know, Dean, we've all been damaged. We all went to college. We all sat in a class knowing the professor was lying to us. We knew it was a lie, but the only way we were going to get a grade was to return his lie back to him, and we thought, well, okay, we wouldn't be hurt. But what it taught us was how to be silent in the midst of unrighteousness. And it is a plague that has brought this nation down. It's bringing this nation down today.
And people, I think, don't understand this is being taught in our schools. This is being used in our political system. This is being used in our churches. And the average individual doesn't understand it's being used in planning commissions in your local community as they come in and use the consensus process to get the good people to go along with programs that if they had an ounce of common sense, they never would go along with. But most people really don't want to stand up and take a stand when everybody else seems or at least appears to be going the other way. I know I saw this process used so effectively in organized medicine. The reason that medicine is such a tragedy today and expenses are just completely outlandish is because the doctors never understood they were being manipulated by their leaders. And a lot of this is really based upon manipulation by people in positions of authority, isn't it, Dean?
Right. And, yeah, because the facilitator is trained in this very language you mentioned, the seems to be, or theory language. Because if you and I are working on an experiment, we'd say, well, I think that's going to work. And I'd say, well, that seems to be right. And if you go into that language, there's no butting of heads as far as on principle, because you never arrive. You're in transformation. You're in change. And so the agenda is to get everybody into this theory language, to practice theory, not to practice knowing. Because you come in and say, well, 2 + 2 = 4, you know it, and it's not an issue of relationship with somebody else, because they might think it's 5. And you're going to just say, well, no, you're wrong, and that hurts their feelings. The transition language is the key to this. The transition language is our feelings. And that language is, well, I ought to be able to. You know, the parent says, well, you can't go out. And the child says, well, I ought to be able to. Well, why do they say that? Because their feelings are out the door. And so the social engineers, the facilitators, the transformationalists, they know that if they can simply get everybody to share, well, I ought to be, should be, might be, could be, that relationship language, that feelings-driven language into the room, the people who come in with a thou shalt not language, even saying 2 + 2 = 4 and cannot be any other number, that's an attitude to everybody else of being negative and divisive and hateful and intolerant and prejudiced and a lower order thinker and unadaptable to change, and you end up being the one who needs counseling because you hurt the people's feelings for going, well, we ought to be able to. And the ought to be is always built on an I. You know, the child says, I ought to be able to go out. That's the ego that Freud and Marx were wanting to liberate, to deliver man from accountability, higher authority, from God, from the parent, from anyone who comes in with truth. Because now truth is relative, and why should you obey somebody who says this is right and that is not? And it moves us then. Once we get into this ought to be language, then it moves you into justifying. You have to justify your feelings. You have to justify the relationship. You have somebody that has principles, standards that are differing or opposite of those you came into the room with, that your parents or God or some higher authority gave you. And so now you're thinking. That thinking is always to the compromise of the standards you had when you came in the room. And why do you have to justify it? Because your job is on the line. Your reputation is on the line. Your grade is on the line. Your next term in office is on the line. Your term as a minister or your time as a minister is on the line. And so now fear of man, what will man think, now determines your daily walk, not what God has given you. Because God's word doesn't come to us with I feel and I think. It's not by private interpretation. It is God-breathed. It is as faith. You accept it as a fact. and you live it as a fact. And if, as we progressively move into this pagan world, the law of God itself is under attack. And the saddest part of all this is the church is at the helm of attacking the Word of God, even as they supposedly or seem to study it.
Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Dean Kutcher, and let me tell you that if you are in the area where he's going to be speaking, you will miss a great deal if you don't get in and hear him. I've listened to Dean many times and discussed these issues with him. I always learn something, and you will as well. So if you're in the, certainly in the Great Northwest, you'll want to be coming to these various talks he's going to be giving this next few days, and I'm sure he'll be there in the Illinois or Michigan or Indiana before long, and we'll be announcing that when he's in those regions. Listen and learn. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Dean Gocher, and of course, we're talking about this whole process of the dialectic of diaprax, of practicing, putting into practice these techniques. Well, you know, people find it difficult to believe that there could be an organized effort to control our minds, and yet it's used all the time. It's used in the media, it's used on, certainly in the motion pictures, but it's used, and I think one of the most frightening things is how this idea of consensus has been moving into our religious institutions, first into our seminaries, and now into our churches all across America in something called the Church Growth Movement. And it's really remarkable to see a small church begin to grow and prosper, and people coming in, so many people coming in, attracted by the loud, boisterous music that comes right out of the pit of hell, and, of course, by a message that never accuses anybody of being a sinner, because, after all, well, sin is really in the eyes of the beholder. And, Dean, you talked about how this really began in the Garden of Eden. Could you give that as an example of how this whole process works out? What happened in the Garden of Eden? You mean they were actually practicing Hegelian dialectics there?
Well, if you look at the procedure, the method, yes. Satan actually, if you want to be a facilitator, I just tell people, social engineers call the facilitator a heresiarch. In other words, he's going to be the one to change you, make it easy for you to change your position to relate with something in the room that your position had warned you not to compromise. And so when Satan came to Eve, he used a neuro-linguistic sentence structure. It's the most powerful tool in hypnosis. And what it does, it is, it sensitizes you to your feelings and your resentment towards a higher authority that told you you couldn't do something. And see, when the parent says you can't go out, and you want to go out, the first thing we did was, when we got old enough, we try to give in dialogue, because that's where you can get them to compromise. So we'd say, well, why? Why can't I go out? Now, a traditional parent might dialogue with you sometimes, because they're just going to teach you. And then there are times they don't have to teach you. They're just going to tell you, this is the reason you're not going out, and the reason is because I said so. And that is the very structure that God presents. That is God. And Marx understood this. Marx's fourth thesis on Feuerbach, he wrote 11 of them. But this is an amazing quote. Marx states, a brilliant man, evil but brilliant. He said, once you discover that the earthly family is the secret of the heavenly family, that sort of puts you to sleep right there. But once he's saying, once you realize that the way the parents train the children up is God's secret, and he says the former, the earthly family, in other words, the traditional family, must be destroyed. Let me say that again. Once you discover that the earthly family is a secret of the heavenly family, the earthly family, the former, must be destroyed in theory and practice. In other words, how do you destroy the traditional family that produces a child's mind, develops a child's mind, who recognizes accountability and higher authority? So when they get of age, they hear God's word, and they recognize that there is a God. Now they can obey or disobey, but that structure is there to recognize obedience or disobedience. And Marx understood the only way you can do that is through dialogue, theory. Because we get in the lab and we, well, I think this is going to work. How do you feel about that? And it's not, no, because 2 + 2 = 4. If I said I think 2 + 2 = 4, you could say I think 2 + 2 = 5, and we can get along. We can just discover all day long. But the moment somebody says no, 2 + 2 = 4. It's emphatic. It's not going to change. And you're wrong. It makes everybody else wrong. And so when Satan came in with what's called...
Well, hold that thought just for a moment, Dean. We bring our other stations aboard. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Dean Gotzer, who's going to be speaking in the Spokane area for this next few days, he's talking about how you get people to begin to compromise their beliefs of absolute, and certainly the Bible is absolute. God said these things, this is what you should do. But, of course, the whole idea of those who would destroy our religious beliefs, who would destroy our society, who would destroy this idea that we are beholden to God and those who will not be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants, we have to get away from rule by God. We have to be more open. And of course, once we turn our back on God's teaching, we lay out the ground for moral anarchy. And then, of course, when certainly this demand for individual rights leads to a chaotic situation, then the demand for an orderly situation will lead to the loss of all liberty. Or somebody once said, when liberty leads to a loss of order, then the demand for order will lead to a loss of liberty. And that's exactly what Marx and Engels and the people who practice this, and Plato, who advocated many of these basic things. What Plato wanted, he wanted to destroy society. He wanted to destroy the family. He wanted all power centralized in the state. And that's what communism and Karl Marx are all about. It has nothing to do with redistributing the wealth of the rich and the powerful, because many of the powerful embrace this very concept. In fact, they are being well rewarded because they have come to worship a different God, and they're being rewarded, at least here on this earth, with temporal rewards, but those who join them will spend eternity in hell with them. Because this is a spiritual battle for the minds of the American people. So pick up the story there, Dean.
Okay, now, when Satan approached Eve, now, if you go to college and you go into counseling or even in education, you're going to run across Carl Rogers' work. And you can sum up his works with three statements. The room, the environment that we use to discuss anything has to be open-ended. Now, that sounds nice, but God isn't open-ended. No law of nature is open-ended. The Constitution isn't open-ended. And so we have a different way of thinking. The moment we go open-ended, as say, we can talk about anything, and you're sitting there, somebody's talking about something's immoral or ungodly, and you say, no, we can't talk about that. Well, why? Because it's wrong. Because God said so. You know, that's an abomination. And so now the room will turn on you, especially if I get everybody into the, well, I feel and I think relationship language. You come in with thou shalt not. Even your friends will be irritated with that because you're bringing a voice of authority into the room, the voice of punishment for iniquity, and you've actually been silent maybe and taken part in it, and all of a sudden there's this fear that comes over the room. And it creates stress and anxiety, and the release of that anxiety is attack upon you. And so these social engineers know that. The guys who are trained in this, not a lot of people learning, but they don't know where they're going until they finally are totally trapped in it, and then that's their future. But so open-ended, we can talk about anything. Get rid of thou shalt not. And then non-directive, number two. In other words, I'm not going to tell you what's right and wrong. That gets rid of is. God said, I am that I am. He directs. All the laws of nature direct. They tell us what is. And so we learn a path. We learn the steps to take to do things right. And so that's out of the room. So we got rid of the command of God, the command of the parent, the higher authority's limiting power, and then we get rid of the higher authority himself. Open-ended, non-directive. All of education being moved onto this structure. Our courts have gone there. You know, they're not interested in the Constitution unless it's their interpretation, how they feel, what they think. No, not, they don't want to go to the facts. They don't want to know what the framers really meant. And then the third one is, once you do these two, the third one is adverse to any closed paradigm. In other words, you don't like that person who comes in and says, right is right and wrong is wrong. You resent them. You have this irritation towards them. So that's the sentence structure Satan used on Eve was a sentence structure to, was a very face-to-face, informal kind of sentence structure. Neurolinguistics, most powerful tool in hypnosis. They don't know in the Hebrew how to end that yea hath God not sent sentence. They don't know whether to put a period at the end or a question mark. And what they did was he paraphrased, and this is what's happening in churches. We're getting all these interpretations. They even call them translations, but when one person translates from the Greek and the Hebrew into his Bible, that's an interpretation. That is not a translation. It's his opinion. It's how he feels. It's what he thinks. So it's falsely called translations. They're interpretations, and that's where your deception is going to be taking place.
And of course, what the serpent said to Eve was something to the effect that, no, God did not say that you would surely die if you were to eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. He didn't say you were really going to die. He raising that question. Of course, God had basically told them they were not to eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and even
right.
evil. But Satan raised that question in Eve's mind. And, well, maybe God really didn't say that you're not going to die if you would disobey the Lord. And so they ate of the fruit of the tree of good and evil. And, of course, look at all the problems that there's been ever since then. We'll be back in just a few moments here at Radio Liberty and welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Dean Gotcher. We're talking about the dialectic process. We're talking about diaprax. We're talking about the consensus process. We're talking about how our minds are being manipulated on almost every aspect of society. Now, this technique is used very, very broadly and very widely within business and within management to get everybody in line, to get them to go along, to get them to compromise their positions. It's used within stockbroker's office to get stockbrokers to force you to buy things you really don't want to, that really are not being sold for your benefit, but for the benefit of the stockbrokers. But they can talk people in the stock business into doing things they know are wrong because, well, everything is relative. And even though you know when you get the advice from your account manager that's going to be wrong, you go ahead and do it because it's the, well, it's the practical thing to do. And after all, we have to be practical. Pick up the story from there.
Well, the practicality is what we see from our perception, what will benefit other people. And see, if your elected official goes in and he changes his position because he thinks something will be beneficial in the change of his position for, and he may have lost sight of his constituents, he may have gone to a bigger picture of the beyond the nation, to an international mindset, and there's always an invested interest in that, though. There's something for him to gain out of it. In other words, he's moved from principle and standard to a self-driven agenda. Now, in the garden, that same thing happened, because the moment I get you to share, anyone to share, there ought to be. I found their ego. I found their resentment. If somebody says, thou shalt not, and I ought to be able to, may respond. And any time, by the way, you do hear an ought to be, a thou shalt not is under attack. So I have to just simply get everybody in the room to share their ought to be. And I know where their resentment towards higher authority is. The key to brainwashing, simply ask the soldier deal of America. And if he opens his mouth, he's in trouble, because eventually he's going to say, well, America ought to be different there, if you keep the dialogue going. I found his dissatisfaction to a higher authority. I'll put him with three or four other soldiers, and he's going to dialogue himself out of his sovereignty. Same with a group grade in the classroom. This is what the team building, the consensus building is all about. This is the same thing Satan was throwing at Eve. If you look at a pattern or a scheme or a method, he simply creates an environment that's open and non-directive, adverse to any closed paradigm way of thinking, where Eve then paraphrases. She goes, well, we can eat of all the trees in the garden, but can't eat of the tree in the middle of the garden, and then she throws out her ought to be, nor touch it. And once she shares that, now she is...
Hold that thought right there, Dean. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess this afternoon or this evening is Dean Gotcher. We're talking about this whole process of frank brainwashing, which is so prevalent in every aspect of our society today, and it isn't happening just by accident. There is a master plan behind this. And people know exactly what they're doing. They're trained as facilitators in this process. It is brought into your community, whether it be the planning commission, whether it be your schools, whether it be your churches, whether it be your newspapers. No matter what it really is, it was brought in all across America to get us to give up our ideas of absolutes and begin to compromise our position until eventually we believe in absolute nothing, and freedom as we've known it is simply a remembrance of things past. Now, if you're out there, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we'll be glad to talk to you and discuss any or have Dean answer any questions you have. But what we're talking about is pivotal, is seminal to any understanding of what's going on today. So pick up the story from there, Dean.
In fact, what happened in the garden is to a social engineer, and there were men like Walter Benjamin who studied scriptures, Marxists, who studied scriptures looking for these procedures. And this procedure that took place, this method that took place in the garden, is the key to changing a person, to moving them from an established position into a relative self-driven, the values clarification, situation ethics outcome. And so the key to that, though, is to find that ought to be within you, that dissatisfaction to the parent, dissatisfaction to God. It may be expressed, it may not be expressed, but it's important for the facilitator to draw that out of you. They say in the workplace, draw them out. In other words, get them, create an environment first that isn't negative, because if somebody comes in and says, thou shalt not, then you're not going to share your ought to be. And so when Eve then brings it in, she says, well, we can eat all the trees, we can't eat the tree in the middle garden, nor touch it. Then she says, lest you die. And but again, that's all a paraphrase. That's not what God said. And Satan then has to get rid of the thou shalt not sleep just right away. He says, no, you won't die. And then he gives her this empowerment, this stakeholder mindset that, you know, you'll be like God. God knows in the day thereof. And that sentence structure indicates that to her that Satan, Lucifer, is a friend with God. And so this is a convoluted structure that draws the person into a self-esteem, that they are in partnership with the parent, in partnership with God, in partnership. There's equality across the board, and now they're set free from fear of God. And so in that little, just a few little verses, we have the procedure to begin the process to liberate a person from the fear of God. And we today have a nation that does not fear God. We fear man. Our security in this nation is found on government. Our framing father said, don't trust government. You know, cursed is a man who trusts in man. Now, we bow down, we work half the year, if not more, to support a system that makes us feel free. We seem to be free, and yet we have more regulations than the citizens of this nation have ever experienced in the past. And so that's the oppression that is coming down the road, that is materializing around us, and it's because we have rejected the law. Somebody came along and says, no, we don't have to look at the law anymore. We don't have to obey, you know, one who comes in and says, this is right and that's wrong. You can think for yourself. Now, the third event that happened was that Eve started thinking. She didn't turn to Adam for direction. God said, you know, she was the desire of her heart is to your husband. She didn't turn to God for direction. She now thinks on her own, and she's a scientist. She's theorizing. She says, it's good for food. Well, was it? No, in the here and now it might seem like good for food, but the reality, it's death. And so she, as a scientist in the laboratory, is making an experiment. It seemed to be good for food, seemed to be pleasing to the eyes, and it seemed to be to make one wife. Well, what kind of wisdom was this? This is the wisdom to justify why she didn't have to do what the parent told her to do. She didn't have to do what the Constitution told her to do. She didn't have to do what God told her to do. It's the pattern I'm looking at, the scheme, the method. And once you go there, you're practicing this dialectic. And what it is, the thesis is God's statement. Dying, you will die. The antithesis, the opposing is Lucifer who says, you won't die. So those are black and white, right and wrong. The third, the synthesis is Eve. She is now, through her feelings, through her rebellion, her resentment, because she couldn't do what she wanted to do. When God said, thou shalt not, she wanted it somewhere along the line, she wanted to at least touch that tree. Then Satan comes along and allows her to role-play in herself, to think the imagination of the heart, the imagination, desire to relate with something you've been told you can't relate with. This is why homosexuality is prevalent across this nation, is because the social engineers liberated that mindset because they saw parents who disciplined children and said, no, you can't behave a particular way. The child might have an impulse that way. The Bible calls that lust. That's temptation. But the social engineers come in and say, no, that's your child's normal behavior. Quit saying thou shalt not. Quit presenting a godly structure to your children, because there is no God, that we are God, and we can decide for ourselves what is right and wrong. And that's all Eve was doing. She was empowered. She was liberated. She had potential. She could be like God.
And I think that's the big thing today, is the fact that there are many people who don't like the teachings of the Bible because God has all these rules. Thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do that, thou shalt not do anything else. And, of course, they want to be free. They don't understand that the father of lies is behind that. If you read Albert Pike's book, Morals and Dogma, which is, of course, the Bible of one of the largest secret organizations in America today, he will tell you exactly that. That the thing is that Satan gives you total freedom. You aren't bound by all these rules and regulations that God's made. Well, right now I just want to make a quick announcement that Derry Brownfield, that's Derry Brownfield, who is a talk show host, does shortwave just as I do, he'll start tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock Eastern Time on 12.160 megahertz. That's Derry Brownfield. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, that is, at 12.160 megahertz. And let's go to Edward, who's calling us from Utica, New York. Hi, Edward. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. It's good to hear you, and especially your guest. I couldn't get his last name, but his first
Dean,
name is
Dean Gotcher.
Gotcher?
Right.
Okay. I have one question, and that is, with all the various Bible translations or versions, let's say, that are out there, you've got to focus on one, it seems to me, and otherwise you're going to get confused.
No, that's, did you ever stop to think maybe they want to confuse you?
I was wondering what is recommended.
Well, they got the question there, Dan?
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, you know, if you want to study all the way to the Greek, you can do that, or the Hebrew. But, you know, there's a lot of pagan people who study the Greek and Hebrew. The text isn't going to save you. And I need to clarify that. Now, you can go to I use the King James. I study Greek, but I like the King James. I see there are some problems with there. Power is used instead of authority in Romans the 13th. There's a world of difference in the use of the word. Using power instead of authority, and the Greek word is the word authority. But even Luther, this was one of the things he stated. He said, study from one text, even if there's some problems with it. You're going to go deep in the scriptures. You're going to check it with the Greek. You're going to check it with the Hebrew, and you're going to gain understanding in the text. The problem is with the church is when you go to the interpretations, the opinions, the how I feel and what I think, you'll never die. See, when you open up the text, there's a problem with the text. It's going to kill you. It says you're dead in your sin, and so instead of dying, just reading the text and realizing we're dead, we don't want to die, so we go to a Christian bookstore and find some book or the latest fad that keeps us alive. It's somebody's opinion. The interpretation of the text is found in Christ. He interprets the text. Now, give me an example. Rick Warren's Purpose-Driven Church, he talks about the sower of the tares in the wheat. And he says, the church, we're in leadership, we're not in sorting business. So he ties that parable to the church, the sowing of the tares in the wheat. This guy's got a PhD in theology. Well, he evidently didn't read Jesus' interpretation of the sowing of the tares in the wheat, because Jesus said, it's of the world. So, Rick Warren is taking a world system that we're going to have the tares in the wheat, and has brought it into the church. And so you can take these polls and surveys and find out how people feel and what they think, bring the diversity group in, have them 15 translations. You can't go deep in the scriptures. You're not going to go deep because you're going to hurt somebody else's feelings. And so what you're going to do is you're going to learn to compromise. It's not the text that's important anymore. It's our interpretation, our opinion. And it's going to change you. You're not going to be seeking the Lord for direction. You might start out there. You might even grow in that direction for a while, but you're not going to go deep. The Bible talks about the rocky soil. And the key to the rocky soil, the types of soils, is that when the seed is first thrown into it, it grows rapidly, but then its roots don't go very deep because the word becomes an offense. An offense is a people thing. And so you're not going to go deep in the word because it becomes an offense to somebody else, and you'll never go deep in the word of God. And so when difficult times come, you depend on man instead of God. And cursed is the man who trusts in man. So the church, the whole church growth program is management on people, how to move people from the fear of God to the fear of man, and covered all with Scripture.
And, of course, if you read The Purpose-Driven Life, why, you will find that that's what they do. They got 15 different versions of the Bible, and so anything that they want to come up with, they'll use a different version. They won't use one version and use that as the basis. You can always find a version of the Bible that will say exactly what you want, and I think that the multiple versions of the Bible are designed to confuse people, to lead them away from the Scriptures. And, after all, if there are all these different translations, then really there isn't any word of God, is there? And that's what they've done. They've raised the question in people's minds. Anything else, Edward?
Well, the only thing that I was trying to clear is the person that I talk with says, well, your version is different than mine, and it says a little bit different. And so they disagree with me on a particular issue.
And that's why I stick with the King James. I always have, and I will continue to do that, because, at least it's a fundamental one. I think it's the most widely one used in the world. And where you get into real trouble is the more versions you get, the more interpretations you're going to get. And I think that's done intentionally and purposely. It's not simply by accident that Rupert Murdoch owns the text of the NIV. And Rupert Murdoch, I don't think anyone would ever consider accuse him of being an evangelical Christian. He owns Zondervan that publishes the NIV.
And if you do have a disagreement, the thing is to at least look at one of them and go in and study where that verse is, study the words. And that's the key. You've got to get to one of them and study the words, what the text really is saying in the original. Like King James, you can go to the Strong's. Now, and even Strong's, with the use of power versus authority, he corrects it. I mean, he actually gives you the right Greek definition of that word. So it's important that we get these good Bible tools out there. But the stuff that's coming down contemporary is just laced with this social human relationship language that moves you away from the personal accountability before God. On the day of judgment, the village has no input on God's standard. We're not graded by the village. We are graded by God's standard, and our life is to Him. When David sinned, he didn't say, Israel, I sinned against you. He said, against thee and thee alone have I sinned. Even though the Israel itself was suffered because of David's behavior, he knew that the ultimate accountability was to God. And we're losing that. We're filtering our relationship to God through humanity instead of our relationship with God. Is His love then speaks out through us. It's His love that goes into the world. And it's a subtle change, but has major ramifications.
Amen to that. Anything else, Edward?
Well, that's fine. I thank you very much for clearing up some things.
Well, now, would you get all those people back there in Utica, New York, listening to our program? At least talk it up. We'd like
I'm trying. I'm trying.
God bless. Thanks very much. Let's go to Ray, who's calling here from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Dr. Stan. I just want to say I agree totally with the man that was just on about the King James. I really do. I believe that the Bible, taken in its purest form, is really the message. The thing that I wanted to say was I used to work at Mule Packard years ago, and they had all kinds of... They had a thing called the HP Way. It was a belief system. And they also used this Peter Drucker.
Yeah.
Management by objective and all that. Do you think, in your opinion, that that's a very very anti-Christian kind of...
Peter Drucker is foundation. He's a pillar of church growth. Rick Warren. Rick Warren recognizes him as one of the pillars. He's a globalist. He has no moral absolutes.
Yeah.
His reading is just... It's transformational Marxist in its globalist agenda.
Yeah.
There's no reconciliation. Once you get down past the surface into the depths of the material, it's all the same. It's all aiming to globalism. How to turn the church into an NGO to the UN.
Yeah.
How to change the way we communicate with one another.
And the workplace.
Every institution we participate in, according to the training labs in this nation, every institution has to participate in this process for world peace, including the church.
Yeah.
And the work, yeah. And education, and it just goes on.
they had a thing called management by objective that they tried to get us all to believe in, and they really tried to brainwash people that worked there. And you know, the managers didn't even know what the HP way was. They didn't know what it was. You know, they talked about it, you know, about this code of ethics of Hewlett Packard, and the managers really didn't know what the hell it was either, you know.
Well, so, and the thing is, it's a discovering experience. In other words, we're going down this journey together. We don't know where we're going, but we're learning to bond and relate and put aside our differences for the sake of humanity on the way. So it damages everybody.
Yeah.
Well, Ray, just to help us to get the message out. It's done so subtly. It's done so cleverly.
Oh,
And, you know, most of our large churches have gone into the church growth movement. They have accepted this alternative approach. It's very, very successful, but it's leading people, I believe, to eternal damnation.
I think this is being done on a large scale at the workplace, is what I'm trying
to
say.
Right, it sure
is. It's called total quality management.
Yeah, right, that's total quality control. I remember that.
The Navy calls it total quality leadership. The police call it the care that there, and the cops program, doctors, HMOs, the politicians, school to work. You know, acronym after acronym, institution after institution, but they're all playing the same procedure. They're role playing. They have a diverse group. You can't have a common faith. Diverse group dialoguing to a consensus, which means you can't have a diverse group dialoguing consensus and keep your principles.
Right.
Mechanical engineers are really frustrated because they. You know, they know that things have to be set and rigid, and you can calculate and you can predict what's going on. So they sit in these sessions and they just go bonkers.
Oh yeah, well, I have a degree in engineering. I kind of agree with you about that. You know, and,
Okay, Ray. Well, thanks very much, and appreciate so much your calling. And let's go to Roger, who's calling from Allentown. Hi, Roger. Question or comment?
Yeah, thanks, Judge. Just quickly, last month the Southwest Radio Church did a whole month for the series on the issues you're talking about with the translations, focusing on the King James. And I'm sure they make tapes available, and I know they archive on their website as well. So just put that into your search engine, and it's very worthwhile getting propagating through your churches, and God bless you all.
All right, and Noah Hutchinson does an excellent, excellent job, and we're certainly very grateful to Southwest Radio Church. We have a good working relationship with them, and certainly appreciate their help and support for our ministry as we support theirs, although they're about 15 times the size we are. Anyway, well, we're just about out of time. Dean, what are the what would you like to, thoughts would you like to leave with us?
Well, first, there's nothing new under the sun. Everything that Eve did, that procedure, is the very procedure of what we're experiencing today. It is groupthink. It is, we're thinking through our feelings, the imagination of the heart, which God flooded the world because of. He says it's going to be like this in the last days. And as bad as government does with this, as cruel as that may be, as evil as it may be in education and the workplace, I tell the folks, wait until you see what the church does with this. Persecution is alive and well in America today, and it's coming from the church, because the church, the institutionalized, dialectic, practicing church of human relationship covered with Scripture, is persecuting the God-fearing, Bible-believing Christian. And it's going on our turf right now.
Well, let's get your itinerary out just one more time. You're going to be up there in the Spokane area.
July 8th, Thursday, I'm going to be in Addy, and that number you can call is 509-684-0180, and that'll be at 7 p.m.
One more time, repeat the telephone number a second time.
Okay, 509-684-0180.
All right.
And then July 9th, Friday, in Spokane at the Coffee House, and that address is 1231 North Washington, and that'll be at 6:30 p.m., and if you want to call somebody, if you can't get the directions or figure it out, it's 509-927-0412. And then on Saturday, we're going to be at, I didn't mention the time before, I'm going to be just north of Spokane in Deer Park, and we're going to be speaking from 9 to 5. It's an all-day Saturday from 9 to 5, and that'll be at the Wayside Community Center. It's more of a seminar, and the address is 2200 West Monroe, and that's going to be from 9 to 5. That'll be, I'll go into depth and stuff I normally don't get a chance to. And then on Sunday in Spokane at 6 p.m., I'm going to be at Calvary Chapel, the gathering place, and that address is 511 West Hastings Road.
All right, sounds like you're going to have an exciting time up there, and we wish you well. If any of our listeners need more information, is there a telephone number or any place they can get more information on your itinerary?
Well, they can email us at iardeangocher@yahoo.com. Again, IAR, which means Institution for Authority Research acronym, iardeangocher@yahoo.com.
All right, fine. Dean, God bless you. Have a wonderful trip up there. And when you get into the Midwest, well, we do have some stations there, Chicago and Flint, Michigan, certainly in upstate New York. Well, we'll be glad to put you on when you get into those areas, and or here in California as well.
If anybody's interested, email us, and when we're out there, we'll have a meeting in your home or church or town hall, wherever.
God bless.
Thank you.
Thanks so very much. Okay, fine. Well, that was Dean Gocher, and Dean is really is out going across America, really at his own expense. I'm sure they will take a collection up wherever he goes to try to help finance what he's doing. But one of those rare people who believes strongly enough that he's given up a regular job to try to awaken the American people, sort of like a Paul Revere out there, and this is why we enjoy having Dean on every time we can, to popularize his talk so that there will be people there, and tell your friends about his ministry. Understand that Christianity is under attack today. It's under attack by forces working within our church who would change the message of the scriptures, begin us to get it compromised, begin us to change our perception of what the Bible really says. Believe me, the enemy is very, very clever. He has supernatural intelligence. Well, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that my ministry is primarily listener-supported, and we're dependent upon those of you out there in the listening audience who believe in what we're doing and would like to become part of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, so that 5 hours a day, 5 days a week, we can reach out across America, our weekend program, going to 36 stations. We are a voice, and that voice is gradually growing. And with your help, it will continue to expand. So if you'd like to know more about the Radio Liberty family, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a free copy of our latest newsletter, really goes into the background of basically the events that led up to 9/11. And it really is a story that you're not going to hear elsewhere. Who was Osama bin Laden? Why did Osama bin Laden do what he did? Why was it that the 9/11 Commission has not told you the real truth about what actually transpired on the morning of September 11th? And we're going to be dealing with the end of that story this next month. But certainly, despite the fact that the President of the United States, Bill Clinton, had ordered on two occasions of the American intelligence agencies, and there are many of them, there's not just the CIA, but there are about 11 different, or at least 9 different intelligence agencies, given them orders to kill Osama bin Laden, they refused to carry out the President's directive. Why would that have happened? Well, you'll at least get a much glimpse into the background of what really happened. If you get my latest newsletter, that's the May-June newsletter, we'll send you one gratis, free of charge. And then, of course, this coming month, why we'll get into the background of what really happened on September 11th. Not what you think you saw happen, not what you saw on television, but what really happened that morning. So there's so much to the story we're not getting. And, of course, 9/11 changed the world in which we live forever. If you'd like to, of course, join the Radio Liberty family, why, we'd love to welcome you aboard. We want to mention that we have a monthly newsletter. We actually send out the 4 best tapes of the month, the 4 best programs we do out of what 25 different programs we present every month. And we take the 4 best tapes, and the people who join the Tape of the Month Club get a chance to listen to those. We ask you, of course, to pray for America, because truly we are involved in a spiritual battle being played on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow evening, we'll be back with you once again at this same date, the same time. Please tell others about our program, encourage them to listen, and till then, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line a special friend, John Spring, who has his own talk show in Southern California, does a great job of interviewing down there, one of the few remaining conservative voices, because you see, gradually, little by little, the voice of truth is being silenced all across America as we move towards the New World Order, the New World Religion. Well, John's on the front lines doing a great job. He's on every, is it Sunday evening, John?
Every Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m.
Every Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m., and what's the radio station?
And it's KSPA, which is 1510 on the AM dial.
All right, is George Putnam up there with you?
He's on the same station Monday through Friday from 12 noon until 2 p.m.
Now, was it Ray Brewer who was down there for so many years? Was that, he would, I'm Roger Hedgecock, I guess it is. Is he still around?
I haven't heard of him, to be honest, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. Anyway, of course, George Putman's been down there for many years. He's in his 80s.
He's going to be celebrating his 90th birthday on the 14th of this month.
In fact, he even brags about having had an affair with Mae West, and you can tell how old he must have been. That was a long, long time ago. Mae West was there. I can remember Mae West back in the 1930s. So George Putman's been around for a long, long time. Be that as it may, we're talking this evening not about George Putman and Mae West. We're talking really about what's going on. We were going to talk in the opening here about a recent book by a man named Joseph Podolsky entitled The Secret History of the Iraq War. Now, most of you who listen to the controlled media think you understand what's happening in Iraq. But, of course, is it really true? Or are you getting the filtered truth that they want you to have? Joseph Podolsky is a fascinating individual. I've read his books, Attack on America and the West, written in 1993. He's written a number of books since then, including Bin Laden, the Man Who Declared War Against America. And then his last book, just immediately prior to this one, which was The High Cost of Peace,
yes.
How Washington and the Middle East Policy Left America Vulnerable to Terrorism. But his latest book, The Secret History of the Iraq War, really gives you tremendous insights. Now, he's written about 8 books in the last 10 years, but this one goes into the background, really, of what led us up into the war with Iraq. And contrary to what most of you believe, you know, he has many fascinating views. He is the director of the Republican Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare. He has access to all sorts of classified and, I suspect, secret sources of information. Very, very well founded. He has some beliefs I'm a little surprised at. I'm not sure he's entirely right. And yet, of course, he probably has access to information I don't have. So, well, that is the background. Why don't you sort of summarize this whole idea that he comes up with in his book, The Secret History of the Iraq War?
Well, Dr. Stan, I'll be honest. I don't know if I can do justice to Podolsky in his latest book, The Secret History of the Iraq War. But I will say that he was a very interesting guest on my program 2 weeks ago. I made an attempt beforehand to read as much as I could of his book, but if you can appreciate the size of the book, it's a large volume, and I just had it a few days before we went on the air, and so there might be a few bits and pieces that maybe I've overlooked.
Well, it's over 550 pages.
Yeah.
And basically, of course, what most people don't understand is that, according to Badansky, why there was certainly a relationship between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, since they both hated America.
Absolutely.
So one was an Islamic fundamentalist, the other was a secular Arab. But, of course, there's also a very close relationship between Osama bin Laden and Iran. And this is what people really don't understand, is that people of Iran, the Ayatollahs there, even though they're Shia Muslims, they're quite willing to work with the Sunni Muslims because they all hate America. All Arabs in the world now are united against the United States. Their leadership may not be, but most of theirs are bought and paid for by American foreign aid. But what we have done is fallen into the worst possible trap we could. By the United States attacking Iraq, we have simply solidified the ideas in the minds of 1.25 billion Muslims that America represents the modern-day crusaders. They are like the Mongols of the 12th and 13th century, who were eventually, after being initially victorious, were eventually conquered and converted to Islam and became part of this whole Islamic movement. And that, of course, where so many of the Muslim countries are part of this. So many of the countries, the various Stan countries, all have their are Muslim countries, going back to the so-called efforts of the Mongols to take to conquer the Muslim area, to conquer Baghdad. And the greatest failure they ever had was when they conquered Baghdad and laid themselves open for destruction. And that is exactly what the Muslims throughout the world are saying. When America took Baghdad, they laid themselves open for ultimate destruction, because now the whole Muslim world will unite against them. Would that be a fair appraisal?
That would be a very fair appraisal, Dr. Stan. Now, to sort of skirt around your question regarding Badansky's book, there's one thing that I feel that is appropriate to add at this time, that Badansky did not really treat too heavily in any of his volumes, to my recollection. And that was a very significant conference that was held in Tehran prior to 9/11. I believe it was in April of 2001. Now, shortly after that event occurred, I was very concerned about that, because general consensus of all the Islamic nations under the guidance of Tehran was basically that all Islamic people should unite and go after Israel and its closest ally. Now, in his book, Badansky focused primarily upon Israel and seemingly ignored the United States, which is very crucial, because that was basically the plan or prelude to 9/11, which our intelligence community basically seemingly did not have a clue about. But when you read Bodansky's book, Dr. Stan, you have to sort of look at it from a Tel Aviv orientation rather than a Washington orientation. And, of course, perhaps
right... You're speaking now that he was actually raised and born and raised in Israel, wasn't he?
Yes, he was born and raised in Israel of parents who were immigrants from Russia, or the former Soviet Union. And... we have to keep in mind, of course, that the Mossad is one of the most effective intelligence gathering sources in the world. I think far superior to our so-called CIA in many respects.
Well, a little working hand in glove with it. In fact, most of the intelligence agencies do work with one another. Of course, it's even sometimes CIA works with the KGB or the GRU, or call it whatever you can.
Yes.
Because there is a secret world out there that most people don't understand of intelligence, where intelligence agencies, although ostensibly aligned against one another, oftentimes are working very closely together with a common goal. And that is, of course, the New World Order, the New World Religion.
But if I may get back to Bodansky's latest book, I find that one of the most disturbing things that I came across in my initial reading was to discover how active Osama bin Laden and his al-Qaeda, along with Tehran's Hezbollah were and are and will be in Iraq. For some reason, we have been led to believe here in the West that Osama bin Laden is hiding up in the northwest province of Pakistan along the border with eastern Afghanistan. But in reality, according to Bodansky, he has been bin Laden has been seen many times in Tehran, as have some of his closest associates of the Al-Qaeda organization. And of course, they've been working hand in hand with Hezbollah on many operations throughout Iraq and neighboring nations.
And for our listeners, of course, Hezbollah is an extension of the Iranian government. It came formed originally by the Ayatollah Khomeini and his followers. So it is that the army of God or the party of God? I can never quite
remember. Hezbollah means the party of God.
The party of God, okay.
Mujahideen means the army of God.
Okay.
And Al-Qaeda means the foundation or the base.
And so most people think of Al-Qaeda as being a product of Osama bin Laden and Shia, the Sunni faith, that the Ayatollahs of the Shia Muslims, the Shia and the Sunni would never work together. And that, of course, is exactly what they want you to believe. They've worked together all along. And
yes.
Iran and Saudi Arabia and these others are working together against the common enemy, who is us. Because, of course, even though they may disagree with one another in certain elements of the faith, there is a common hatred of the Crusaders, and we have fallen into the trap. Or maybe we intentionally got into this trap, or maybe we were drawn into this trap, which is, of course, bringing about World War IV. He refers it to it World War IV.
Yes.
Some people refer to it as World War III. But contrary to everything the American people have been told, we are involved in a world war against the Muslims of this world. And there are going to be terrible repercussions on America as a result of that. And you're not going to get that from the average media, because they don't want you to know what lies in store for this once great nation.
Yes. At the expense of putting Bodansky aside for a moment, there's another book that I have found extremely interesting that actually came to press a few years back, called Seeds of Fire by Gordon Thomas. It's published by the Dandelion Press. The full title of Seeds of Fire is China and the Story Behind the Attack on America. And what I found very interesting about this particular book that Gordon Thomas wrote back in the late 1990s, early 2000s, was essentially that even though the United States and NATO accidentally bombed the Chinese embassy in Belgrade, Yugoslavia, and even their intelligence officers came to the same conclusion, that the Chinese government did not want to officially accept such a report, because the demagogues in Beijing wanted to use this as an excuse to lash out at the United States. And of course, we know what happened when they required one of our EP-3 aircraft, to land on Hainan Island. It was a forced landing, which, of course, was never mentioned in the news media. But what we did not know was that Osama bin Laden made several trips to China in the years prior to 9/11. And on the day of 9/11, just about the afternoon their time over in Kabul, in Afghanistan, one of the largest and most high-ranking Chinese contingents landed at Kabul Air Base to meet with the representatives of the Taliban.
Now, when was this?
This was on 9/11.
Okay, on the very day of 9/11. Huh?
It was on the very day of 9/11, just a few hours after the attack. And just about that same time, they proposed providing with the Taliban with the latest state-of-the-art air defense systems, which, of course, they did not have in their possession. Meanwhile, it appears that George Tenet, director of the CIA, received a red alert message from Tel Aviv, which indicated that Communist China had sponsored Osama bin Laden's event of 9/11.
Now, because for our listeners out there, Gordon Thomas is a very well thought of author. You may not have heard of him a great deal, but he's written a number of very provocative books on many subjects dealing with American intelligence. He's centered in Europe, centered in England, as I recall, but a man, you know, you would not want to ignore what he says. Gordon Thomas is very well thought of, very accurate, very little talked about in America. He doesn't get, of course, the play that that so many of our authors do, because he's not establishment, because he tells you the truth, and, of course, they constantly are pushing the authors who tell you what is not the truth. Why? Because our media is largely dominated by our intelligence agencies, and if you doubt that, you need to get the book written by William Odom, entitled, and we don't actually carry it, but you can get the important quotes in my April newsletter, General William Odom, a four-star Marine general who was in charge of NSA, the most secret of all the secret intelligence organizations. And he talks about the CIA having journalists planted in our media. Now, he doesn't make that statement. He said, should the CIA have journalists planted in the media? Should the CIA be assassinating people? Should the Defense Department be collecting dossiers on American citizens? See, he can't come out because, after all, he has signed all these sworn statements, but he can ask those questions. And I think as you think about the questions, you obviously know the answer. So the CIA and the other intelligence agencies have people planted within the media to control, in large part, what the American people think. And once you begin to understand that, then you can begin to understand we're just not getting the truth. If you want to get the truth, you get on the Internet and find out what they're publishing over in Asia, in the Southeast Asian Times, or what they're publishing in Le Monde in Paris, or The Guardian in England, or Le Figaro in France. But you're not going to get it from the American media, because almost every major branch of the American media is controlled by someone associated with the CFR. And I'm talking about the Wall Street Journal. I'm talking about the Reader's Digest. I'm talking about National Review and American Spectator. I'm talking about the New York Times and the Washington Post and Time and Newsweek and U.S. News. All of our major media and our major broadcasting networks are controlled by people associated with the CFR. And if you doubt that, you can give us a call and ask for the article by Richard Harwood, written in 1993, called The Ruling Elite. I guess it's a ruling journalist or a journalist elite, something of the sort. And yep. He was the ombudsman for the Washington Post, writing about what he called the closest thing we have to an American establishment. It isn't the closest thing. It is the American establishment. They control not only the government and the media, and the great foundations, they control what the American people think. So pick up the story from there, John.
Well, before I get back to Bodansky, there's another thing I wanted to mention. I had a very long and delightful conversation with Gordon Thomas a few weeks ago. He was at home in his Irish home over in Ireland, and we had a very pleasant conversation. His health is marginal. He's back in the hospital for treatment of a cancer, but during that time, I more or less gave him what I felt about the bombing of the Chinese embassy in Belgrade, Yugoslavia, and the Chinese mentality, which basically requires that one pay back the enemy tenfold or a hundredfold, depending on the crime. And he generally had only time for a few minutes, but he was willing to talk with me for nearly an hour, because he was fascinated that someone who had not yet read his book had such an approach to the situation over there. And of course, Gordon Thomas happened to be in China during the time of Tiananmen Square, and actually took photographs, which some of which are included in.
We'll be back here in just a moment with our good friend John Spring here at the Radio Freedom Network. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is John Spring. We're talking about Joseph Bedensky's book, The Secret History of the Iraq War. And, of course, John has been talking about a recent conversation he had with Gordon Thomas, a very well-known author, who's written a book about the relationship between Al-Qaeda and the Chinese communists. And why should we be surprised? Because, of course, the philosophy of so many people is the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So pick up the story from there, John.
Well, Dr. Stan, what I found interesting was that he spent a considerable amount of time in China. He also had an opportunity to interview some high-ranking intelligence officers who had defected from the People's Republic of China. And as a result of these conversations and interviews which he had with these defectors, it became very clear to him that China at this time knows full well that if they lash out directly at the United States, that that would mean an all-out thermonuclear war for China. But China, being very pragmatic, used Osama bin Laden as their surrogate, basically, to lash back at the United States because they wanted to prove to their people, basically, that they could get even with the United States for the bombing of the UN embassy, even though that was a mishap.
The Chinese embassy there would be in Belgrade, right?
Correct, yes. And what bothers me, Dr. Stan, is that since both North Korea and Iran are now nuclear powers in their own rights, basically, they both have long-range missiles capable of delivering nuclear warheads to a distance at least halfway across the United States, is something to be of concern about. And because, of course, Pyongyang is so close to Beijing, geographically speaking, I think there would be a reluctancy on the part of the Chinese to consider having North Korea as a loose cannon lash out of the United States. But by contrast, Iran, which they have built up as a nuclear power with missile capability, could possibly strike at the United States through its three submarines that it has in its fleet, or possibly some of its oil tankers or other merchant tanks in its ships in its fleet. And we can't rule out the possibility that such a procedure may occur. Now, Bedensky, in one of his latest newsletters, I think that went on the internet on approximately the 24th of May, just 2 months ago, had a quotation from one of the high-ranking Iranian officials in Tehran, who was more or less in charge of terrorist operations, and he made no secret about the fact that in the very near future they plan to carry out so-called spectacular attacks against both the United Kingdom and the United States, and even boasting that there are many vulnerable spots in both of these nations which will make, quote, excellent targets, unquote, from their standpoint. So this is something else that concerns me regarding the current situation.
And I think it really should. The average American could not imagine an attack on America. Now, the attack is not going to come from within because most of the terrorists here are under very control and observation. But from without, very possibly. We'll be right back. And, of course, what we're talking about is the potential for an Iranian strike on the United States. This, people have forgotten, is a country that we created. We overthrew the prime minister, his name was Mossadegh, back in 1953. We put the Shah in power. We overthrew the Shah in February of 1979 and put the Ayatollah Khomeini in power with his radical Islamic movement that he led. And, of course, we knew that the Hezbollah, which was his organization, was responsible for the bombing of the American embassy in early 1983 in Lebanon, and then, of course, the attack on the American barracks there. And later that year, in 1983, where over 241 Marines were killed, and we did absolutely nothing about it other than to conceal the fact from the American people. And Ty, for those of you who have read my latest newsletter, my May-June newsletter, will find out that time and again, we have actually actively encouraged strikes by these Islamic terrorists by refusing to retaliate when we knew exactly what they were doing. And we did not do this accidentally. We were preparing for just times such as this. And time again in Iraq, why the Iraqi military tried to overthrow Saddam Hussein, the wicked Saddam Hussein, and he is a wicked man. And yet time and time again, the American State Department betrayed the Iraqi military officers who were ready to risk their lives, and they were arrested and tortured to death by the wicked Saddam Hussein, who we had financed for so many years. And it doesn't make sense unless you understand that there is a script that's being followed. I honestly believe that we're seeing this unfolding event that's drawing America into World War, call it III, call it World War IV. It doesn't really matter. Joseph Badansky refers it to World War IV.
Yes.
But if anybody out there thinks that we are going to get off scot-free and that we're not going to see our cities in smoking ruins, then they haven't read history, because there's no incidents in all history where a nation has turned its back on God, where God has not eventually brought his judgment on that nation. So if you look at it from a spiritual point of view, it should be very obvious what's going on. And I think Joseph Badansky's book has a great deal of good information in it. And I think that we'll get John's views on that. Of course, John has been talking about Gordon Thomas's book, Seeds of Fire, pointing out the fact that the Chinese communists were working with Osama bin Laden as well. We have a lot of enemies out here. And of course, remember, Communist China is the best enemy that American money could buy. Being totally financed today, or almost totally financed by the West, being brought into the Western sphere of influence with massive loans to the companies, tax write-offs to American companies to go to China to begin to build up their economy for the coming war with America. Incredible, but then there are many incredible things going on today. But it's like what happened in Hitler's Germany when American corporations were over in Germany in the 1930s, building up the German military in preparation for World War II. Those of you who have any question, we have a letter that written by the American ambassador in 1936 to Colonel House, asking why American corporations were building up Hitler's war machine when there wasn't any profit to be made because of the exchange controls. We'll pick up the story from there, John.
Well, getting back to Bodansky's book, I was fascinated by it. And there was one thing in particular that fascinated me in particular regarding the cooperation that Saddam Hussein received from both the Chinese communists and North Koreans in the construction of several underground bunker tunnel systems. And unlike conventional underground bunker systems, the North Koreans in North Korea have reached depths exceeding 200 meters beneath the surface of the ground. And no one knows to this day exactly how deep beneath the surface of the tunnels and bunkers are located in Iraq, because, to be quite honest, as far as we know, none of these have yet been discovered by the coalition forces, even though we've occupied or supposedly occupied Iraq for more than a year now. And of course, we have to understand that there are a great deal of skirmishes still going on, that for some reason none of these have been found even to this day. And
we're not trying to find them very hard.
No, we're not.
Maybe nothing is as it appears to be, because, ladies and gentlemen, we're really fighting a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological, cultural, economic, and financial battlefield. And until people recognize the spiritual forces behind what's going on, you can't understand anything, because nothing really makes any sense from a logical point of view. Why are we building up communist China? Why did we put the Ayatollah Khomeini into power? Why did we help Saddam Hussein? Nothing makes sense unless you understand there's another agenda. We'll be right back in just a moment with John Spring. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is John Spring. John, why don't you pick up the story from there?
Okay. One thing that, from a geographic standpoint, I found somewhat fascinating when I examined a map of Iraq that was published recently by the National Geographic Society. I was looking at the area of Iraq between the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers, and of course I saw the word Mesopotamia in parentheses, but guess what is the Arab translation of Mesopotamia?
What is it?
It's Al Jazeera.
Now that's the name of the newspaper, isn't it? Their television station?
And their television station.
Right.
So that means in Arabic, basically, Mesopotamia. And I think it's fascinating when we understand the significance or meaning of words that that it takes on a little bit more understanding on our part, so that we're not just saying words that are meaningless, but have a great deal of significance. Because for those of you who have studied ancient history, Mesopotamia included not only the current boundaries of Iraq, but also most of Syria. Just as most Americans are unaware that there was an attempt for the nations of Syria and Iraq to unite as one nation at one time. And of course, both of those nations had Ba'athist parties or Ba'athist regimes running the nations until Saddam Hussein was defeated militarily. In Syria today, you still have the Ba'athist Assad controlling the government in Damascus. So there's a lot of things we need to understand that go beyond just the boundaries of Iraq itself in understanding the current situation. The fact that most of the resistance that we're coming up against has been imported from the neighboring nations, but in particular you have Saddam Hussein and officials of Tehran directing the skirmishes of Al-Qaeda into Iraq, and also the Hezbollah into Iraq and neighboring nations such as Saudi Arabia. But for some reason, we don't hear about this in the press, on our American news media. As I said earlier, we are still led to believe that either Osama bin Laden is dead, or he's still hiding in some cave over in Pakistan.
But you know, John, what people don't understand is everything we know is what we are told by the controlled media. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is John Spring, and we're talking about what's really going on in the Middle East, and the fact that the Osama bin Laden, if you go into his background, was originally funded by the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, there's a fascinating section in the staff report of the 911 Commission on Osama bin Laden, and they were talking about what they want us to believe, and I rather think it's true, that almost all of the Al-Qaeda leaders opposed an attack on America. Mullah Omar opposed an attack on America. The only person who wanted to attack America was Osama bin Laden. And, of course, he simply swept aside the advice of all of his lieutenants, all of the leaders of the Al-Qaeda movement, the leaders of the Taliban, launched an attack on America, which destroyed Al-Qaeda, which destroyed the Taliban. And Osama bin Laden, well, gee, shucks, we just could never find him. Or nor could we find al-Zawahiri or the Mullah Omar. There's just, shucks, we're just so inept, we just can't find these people. Of course, we got satellites that can read a newspaper from space, and we've got night vision, and we can track people down all over the world, but we just can't find Osama bin Laden. Or maybe we're not trying to find Osama bin Laden. Maybe there are other forces out there that we are not being told about that are moving us ever closer to World War III or World War IV. Or it may very well be the fulfillment of Ezekiel 38 and 39. And I suggest you read chapters, I think, 5 and 6 of Ezekiel 38 to get an idea of what may be lying ahead for our country. Because, of course, we've turned against God. So pick up the story from there, John.
Well, as Joseph Bodansky points out in his book, we have had as from the American perspective at least, some of the poorest intelligence imaginable regarding the Middle East. Even currently, our intelligence is very inferior.
I mean, how could that be? We're putting out $30 billion a year for intelligence. We're putting out more money for intelligence than the next 20 nations of the world. And we just can't seem to find anybody or anything. Or does anybody really believe that we are that totally inept, or are we being lied to?
Well, I will say this. Bodansky says, in the area of analysis, we have very few gifted people who can analyze the intelligence data effectively. And I do concur with him in that belief, because it's almost a gift of God to be able to analyze intelligence data in a very effective manner. These individuals are just as rare as Albert Einstein was with thermonuclear energy, basically.
We can send a man to the moon. We can send a probe to Mars and Jupiter, and we can have little carts running around on the surface of Mars. But gee, we just can't get anybody into the Al Qaeda movement to find out what they're doing. I just find that almost impossible to believe, that they would specifically not know so many of the things that Bodansky's talking about, the relationship between Al-Qaeda and the Chinese communists, that they had no idea that the attack was coming on America, why they were 98% certain it would be overseas, and yet, of course, Jordan had told us the attack was coming here, Morocco had told us the attack was coming here, Putin had told us, the Mossad had told us,
yes.
The Germans had told us, and yet they said, oh, no, we thought the attack was going overseas. They knew the attack was coming here. That's why, of course, they were able even to tell the people in the Defense Department, so they didn't fly the morning of September 11th, warn Willie Brown the day before. And in fact, so many of the school children in New York City brought their cameras today to school on the morning of the September 11th so they could see the attack on the World Trade Center, and that's covered beautifully in Dr. Dennis Ketty's book, 9-1-1 prior knowledge. And yet the CIA and all of our $30 billion intelligence administration had no idea the attack was coming. That is just beyond the pale. I don't believe that for one minute. Because why did they warn Willie Brown not to fly that morning if there was just thought the attack was coming overseas? No, I think that there's a great deal of effort to conceal the truth in the American people. That's my next newsletter. They knew exactly what was going to happen, but they cannot let the American people know. So pick up the story there.
Yes, well, as Gordon Thomas pointed out in his book, Seeds of Fire, the Israeli Mossad sent another red alert message to George Tenet, director of the CIA, just a few days prior to 9/11 actually occurring, and they were able to intercept one of Osama bin Laden's cell phone calls to his mother back in Saudi Arabia, sort of apologizing to her that he would not be able to attend one of the forthcoming family functions because he was preoccupied with some very serious matters over in Afghanistan, which of course was directing remotely, at least, the operation for 9/11, the destruction of the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, and other targets, of course, which were not carried out effectively. And so George Tenet apparently did get that information. What he actually attempted to do with it is something that I don't fully understand.
Well, I think I understand, because we had to have an excuse to go to war with Iraq, and the American people didn't want to go to war over there. There had to be a major event. I mean, you could actually read some of the things that Osama bin Laden had said, within a month of the 9/11 attack, and that was the question was, who was going to attack first, the United States or Al-Qaeda? They knew America was planning to attack them, and the other question was, who would attack first? They suspected the Americans were preparing for an attack on them. They didn't really understand that we were waiting for them to attack so that we could counterattack, but we knew the attack was coming and we did absolutely nothing to stop it. And we'll document that in our next newsletter, I think, so that it would hold up in any court of law. Of course, it'll never get into a court of law, because the idea that we would do absolutely nothing. We would allow a major attack to occur and do nothing to stop it is so foreign to the average beliefs of the American people. No one could be that evil, or could they? Well, but then if you look at the greater good that we had to control the oil of the Middle East, that the world is growing out of oil, of course this isn't true, but it's a great theme to justify what they did. We have to control the oil of the Middle East, or else China would move in and take that oil because they're going to need it to energize their society. So whoever controls the oil in the Middle East will control the world, and America had to get its troops stationed permanently in the Middle East. And anybody believes that our troops are coming home, now that we've turned over control of Iraq to this independent government, is incredibly naive.
Yeah, that is so true. I was going to mention, Dr. Stan, that and I may have mentioned this on your program previously, but one of the most fascinating items that was divulged during the 9/11 investigative commission was that when Condoleezza Rice appeared before that commission, she admitted that prior to 9/11, we were in the process of providing one of Afghanistan's neighbors to the north, Uzbekistan, with a considerable amount of military equipment and military personnel to coordinate with them for a future invasion into Afghanistan.
It was all planned long before the 9/11 attack.
Absolutely.
That's so incredible.
But for her to actually say that on the airwaves, and I didn't hear one member of the press or the news media pick up on that or comment on that. And to me, that was perhaps the most significant thing that was stated by any official throughout the entire investigation. And yet, it seemed as if everyone was brain dead at that conference. I couldn't believe that not one member of the press would I would expect that there would be at least one member of the press that would pick up on that if they had any understanding or inkling. I mean, consider the fact that people had written books prior to the commission convening about such allegations that the plans were in fact drawn up for Iraq and Pakistan. But to actually hear an official such as National Security Advisor Dr. Condoleezza Rice state that and confirm that, I found to be mind-boggling, and yet not one person in attendance who covered that event even commented on it.
And we had our aircraft carriers permanently stationed over there in the Arabian Sea or the
yes.
Persian Gulf in preparation for the coming war. We knew the war was coming. And we'd even been, of course, training our troops to speak the language of Afghanistan. Unfortunately, they weren't very smart because they taught them all Arabic, and they speak Dari, at least the people we were working with from the Northern Alliance, so they couldn't communicate readily. But the plan was really all laid out. In fact, Richard Clark had laid out the plan, you know, long before the Bush administration ever came in, and that was, of course, to use special forces units with air power aligned with the Northern Alliance. And they just had this they came to power in January, February of the year 2001. The plan was actually finally accepted just the day before the 9/11 attack. It was all ready to do exactly what we did after the 9/11 attack, but we needed something to get the American people to go along with that. And in fact, as it said in the 9/11 Commission report, the American people were not prepared to go to war in the Middle East until the 9/11 attack. That was the justification, or as it said in the Project for the New American Century report, Rebuilding America's Defenses, which is available on their website at newamericancentury.org, why, of course, we would never be able to implement our new military policy unless there was a catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor. A catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor, and they knew exactly what they were going to do. They just could not let the American people know that. And the description of how they were going to sell this to the American people is laid out in the Bremer Report, published either in January of 2000 or 2001, dealing with You know, the fact that there's going to be terrorism, terrorist attacks on America. But it all begins with a discussion of Pearl Harbor from a book saying, oh, it was just bungling. One group couldn't talk to another. There are all sorts of contradictions. You know, the Intelligence Committee had no idea that the Japanese were going to attack. And it was just this confusion among the hierarchy that allowed the Japanese to be successful. And it was all a lie. They knew the attack on Pearl Harbor was coming. They just couldn't let the American people know that. And it was just so fascinating, as you see, you know, on that very morning, why General George Catlett Marshall was in charge. Just have to be off horseback riding, and nobody could reach him. Sort of like, as the First World War was starting, why Sir Edward Grey, who could have stopped the war easily, was off fishing, and nobody could reach him. Or on the morning of the Day of Pigs invasion, why Alan Dulles, who was in charge of it, just had taken a vacation, so he wasn't there. And over again, we get this same story. Why, if we just had somebody there, why these things wouldn't have happened. But people were always off doing something different. And so, it's the same, it's like deja vu all over again, and they always convince the American people there's nothing we could have done about it.
Yes, this has been the crime of a century, basically, Dr. Fan, at least during my lifetime, that not once has our intelligence agency or our government ever informed the American people, that the 99% of the people that are not part of the power elite, in advance of any catastrophic situation of a geopolitical nature? And the only time that there was possibly an exception to that was prior to the so-called Cuban Missile Crisis. But in that particular case, it was unique because JFK was provided the information from private citizens, not through the intelligence gathering agencies, and he guarded his information jealously until he was able to confirm firsthand with the U-2 aerial reconnaissance flights over Cuba, and then he was still reluctant to share it with the intelligence gathering agencies because he knew full well once he did, it would end up in the Kremlin the next day. So. But that was possibly the only exception that I can recall during my lifetime whenever the American people were somewhat informed prior to an event actually occurring. In all other instances, it was always after the fact.
Well, anyway, of course, as we see what's unfolding now, of course, Joseph Badansky in his book, and I was very, very concerned that we are going to inflame the entire Arab world against us, and people who previously were enemies are now joined together against a common foe, and they look upon America as they did upon the Mongol hordes in the 1300s or 1200s when they conquered Baghdad, and this is what they feel again. The Mongol hordes have conquered Baghdad. The Americans have conquered Baghdad. But just as the Mongols conquered Baghdad, they were eventually defeated, so the Americans will eventually be defeated. And they are mobilizing throughout the Islamic world for the strike back at America. This is what the American people are not being told. And one of the things that Joseph Badansky has talked about, and you even mentioned this a little earlier, is the fact that they're planning the possibility of Iran launching spectacular attacks on America. And, of course, if they come for a submarine, we wouldn't even know who was responsible. We wouldn't even know to retaliate against.
Well, that's a part of the dilemma that we face, and communist China knows that as well as North Korea and Russia, for that matter. But there was another point that you brought up just before that I think needs emphasis. And Bodansky brought this out in his interview on our program 2 weeks ago, and that was basically that the American soldiers were not prepared beforehand and probably even to this day are not indoctrinated properly on how to deal with the Iraqis, because we do not take the trouble to inform our enlistees and our officers of Arab customs or laws or mores, which the Americans should be aware of. And so out of ignorance, rather than benevolence, we have alienated so many thousands of the Iraqi people, the civilians, basically because we just are not informed of their customs and mores. And as a result, we continue to alienate the Iraqis who would otherwise be sympathetic. And, of course, this is the greatest concern that Bodansky and I share with him regarding Iraq, is that this is just going to perpetuate itself and fester so much hate towards the Americans that the situation is going to worsen. There's going to be greater violence than there is right now. And occupation is not going to be pragmatic at all because of the fact that we did not take the time to teach enough of our personnel Arabic that are occupying Iraq or attempting to, and we did not take time to, and still are not taking time to teach and inform the military personnel of the Arabic customs.
And, of course, the fact that we had intentionally and purposely released those pictures of the torture and humiliation and degradation of Iraqi prisoners, over 90% of them who were not military at all, they were just people picked up by sweeps, you know, that we would do this and we would reveal those pictures and bring this whole thing to the attention, not only of the listeners of CBS, but we would release the pictures to the media of the entire world for one purpose, and one, well, several purposes. One, of course, was to inflame the Arab world against us. Two, to justify on the part of the Bush administration doing away with the restrictions that we had, saying Americans cannot be tried before the International Criminal Court. In other words, now any American soldier who is accused of any crime can be taken before the International Criminal Court, and we have given credence to this this extension of the New World Order, because this is really what it's all about. We're fighting all of the war over here to eventually justify the implementation of the world government, but we can't tell the American people that, or the people of the rest of the world for that matter, because very few people want this world government. There's only a small group of elitists who have sworn allegiance to a different god who want it. And as, of course, H.G. Wells said so well in his book, The New World Order, millions will hate the New World Order and will die fighting it, but they intend to impose it. The elite who worship a different god, who march to a different drumbeat, who dream a different dream. And this is the thing that the people must understand, is that, in, as President Roosevelt said, if it happened in politics, it did not happen by accident. It was planned that way. And when they released those pictures, knowing that they would inflame the anger of Muslims throughout the world, they knew exactly what they were doing. It's really very, very clever. The average American can't imagine anything quite this diabolical, but somebody was in charge. Somebody gave the orders. If you knew you were violating orders and you were enlisted man, would you be taking pictures and posting them on the Internet? Does that really make sense to you? If you were going to hold up the bank, would you take off your mask and take pictures of yourself there at the counter, shooting people in the audience or torturing them or raping the women there? Would you do that sort of thing? Of course you wouldn't. And yet that's what our soldiers did. And they said they were ordered to do it. And I rather believe that they were. I believe the leaders know exactly what they're doing. And they know how sensitive the Arabs are. They have a different worldview. And this is the greatest affront of all time. And any idea that the American people may have that we're there to bring democracy is not at all what the Arab looks upon this. This is the return of the Crusaders of the 12th and 13th century. This is the return of the British, of the early part of 100 years ago, as they moved into Iraq and dominated it for 30 years. This is the this is part of this eternal war between Islam and the rest of the world. And, of course, either Islam will survive or Islam will be destroyed, and they intend for Islam to survive. And how many Americans are willing to give their lives in this battle when they're not really quite sure what we're fighting for? We've got real problems, John. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners this evening?
Well, I was just going to say that the porno photographs that were taken at El Gharib are shown all over the Internet and all... So on satellite TV through the auspices of Al Jazeera, and the American people to this day don't fully understand how offensive these are, because they haven't really seen all of these offensive photographs which Rumsfeld wants to keep from the American people.
But of course, if Rumsfeld went right along with showing to the Arabs, why would you do anything that stupid unintentionally?
I don't know, Dr. Stan, but my parting thought is this. I think this is a time when we have to be very prudent. We have to be prepared. As I've told my listening audience, I'm not trying to spread rumors, but realistically speaking, members of the household have not had a first aid course, this might be a very good time to take one. I wouldn't say that it's going to be that effective to stock up on large supplies of survival equipment, one must be trained to survive, and a first aid is a prerequisite, because within the first 5 minutes of an attack, if one does not know first aid, members of the household will not be able to survive. That's the most basic thing. And the second thing I say to my audience, please pray for America. Please pray that America will return to God, because we're living in very crucial times, just as our forefathers lived more than 225 years ago. And we need to be aware that prayer is just as effective now as it was then. But the problem is we have to start praying more.
Amen to that. Well, thank you very much, John. It's always a pleasure. We'll look forward to having you back on our program here in the not-too-distant future.
Okay. Well, the Lord bless you, Dr. Stan.
Good night. God bless.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. Well, that was John Spring, and I hope you enjoyed him. He's one of my favorite guests, and I hope he is yours as well. So now this is the time when we have to remind our listening audience that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out 5 hours every day by radio, shortwave, internet, satellite, reaching a new and growing audience. And quite frankly, we need your help. America has never been in such difficult time as it is today. We face massive retaliation from the countries of the Arab world, and many of these are nuclear. Certainly Iran has nuclear weapons, contrary to what you've been told. Pakistan has nuclear weapons. Saudi Arabia has nuclear weapons. And, of course, Saudi Arabia increasingly faces of being destabilized by Al-Qaeda, which, of course, has been financed in the past by the CIA and by Saudi Arabians as well, with the idea that maybe if they just, it's like feeding the tiger meat, hoping he become a vegetarian. If you give the terrorists enough money, maybe they won't bother you. But, of course, they are doing everything they can to destabilize Saudi Arabia. If it looks like Saudi Arabia is going to fall, we are going to have to move in to prevent the falling into the hands of the Arab terrorists. The Saudis have over 100 nuclear-tipped intermediate-range ballistic missiles. We can't let that fall into the hands of Al-Qaeda. We're living in increasingly uncertain times. The average American is totally unaware of what's going on. We have no defense here. We have no civilian defense system for our leaders. I attended a meeting within the last week and a half. It was in San Diego, and of course at the meeting there was somebody from FEMA there saying, well, you might as well know we don't have a program for you. I'm a lecturer for FEMA. You don't expect the big daddy government to look after you. You've got to come up with a program for yourselves at your local community level. Does your community have any sort of a program? Well, we're going to be advertising and offering very soon information that every community needs to know. It'll be available through Radio Liberty, not throughout the rest of the country. We'll tell you more about that in the very near future. For now, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Remember my number, it's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get our special four-tape set, Islam, the Religion of Doom, or a book, The Prophet of Doom, The Story of the Muslim Religion, or so many other things we have, get a free copy of our newsletter, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.